Looks like they're giving me the wave. Can you guys hear me? Oh, I can hear me. Welcome, my name is Adam Carter. You are in the VDI and Remote Desktop Services Overview session. I've had a couple of people come up and ask me already, so I'll just caveat this. There's about 15% of my content is R2 related, and the rest is Server 2012. So if you know Server 2012 VDI inside and out already, about 15% of this session will be useful to you. If you're not terribly familiar with 2012, then there'll be lots of good information for you here. But just want to make sure you understand that if you're really looking for R2 information, there'll be a little bit in this session, or swing by the VDI booth in the expo hall for a rundown if there's other sessions that you want to catch this session slot. But I do encourage you to stay here. I think this is a pretty good session, so thank you for attending. There we go. So kind of standard disclaimer stuff. The R2 stuff is subject to change. The product hasn't shipped yet. What I'm showing is beta software. I want to background this a little bit, and I know this got talked about in the keynote, and if you happen to go to the People-Centric IT Foundation session. But that's really, when we talk about People-Centric IT, I kind of want to give you some of the background for that. Users want to work from anywhere, right? Users are accustomed to now, they're being internet at the local coffee shop and at home, and they want the ability to take advantage of that and work from those locations. They've also got all kinds of devices. You've got iPads coming in now and various Android devices, hopefully a few Surface tablets as well. People are buying their own machines. In a lot of cases, the devices that they're buying are newer and nicer and maybe even more performant than the corporate hardware they're giving them, so they want to use their own devices. On top of that, you've got a mismatch of applications. Some are local applications that are native for these devices. Some of them are Win32 apps that you've had for a long time. You've got this mix of applications. And then finally, data. You've got corporate data that you don't want to lose on these devices. Nobody wants to be the company that's in the news when a laptop gets lost or stolen that contains all of the company customer credit card records or all of the payroll information for a company. So we need to protect all of that data. When we talk about people-centric IT, it's how do we put the users at the middle, giving them access to the devices and the applications they want while protecting the data. And my clicker's not clicking. And that's really the idea that we want to deliver. VDI is one way we can do this. We can manage that access and still do it in a risk-safe way for you as IT. When we do this, we can enable end users. We really can start to let them to work where they want to work. You can unify your environment. You can still manage all those devices, even the ones you don't own, even the ones that aren't Windows devices. We can still manage them from the same set of tools. And finally, we can protect your data. We can make sure your data always stays in the data center, or we can make sure that data is encrypted and protected when it's not on a corporate-owned device or in the corporate data center, so that if it is lost or stolen, it's not of use to anyone because it's encrypted, or we can just remotely remove it from the device. And when I talk about VDI, I really tell people these are the reasons to do VDI. I always tell customers when I talk to them, if you're doing VDI to save money, you're probably going to be disappointed. It gets expensive to do VDI. You're buying all new hardware, and you're buying server hardware in the data center, so it's going to be more expensive than buying PC hardware. So do it for these other reasons. Do it to enable new work locations for your employees. Do it to keep the data locked in the data center so it's not out roaming on thumb drives or tablet devices that maybe aren't as secure. And that's really why I say to do Microsoft VDI. Enable those solutions. But when you choose VDI from Microsoft, do it because, hey, we can really give you a great management experience, single console for all of your VDI and remote desktop solutions. We really can give you lots of storage options. Use the storage that's right for you. If you've got a SAN, great. We'll leverage your SAN. If you don't have a SAN, if you want to invest in, you just want to buy some local drives and put them in machines, we support that too, and we can still give you a great high-performing VDI solution using local disks. You don't have to invest in a SAN if you don't want to. And again, centrally administering it from one set of tools, reducing the time to deploy, we make it very easy to get VDI deployed. And I'll just recap, we kind of talked about this, the idea of working from anywhere and keeping the data in the data center. When we talk about VDI from Microsoft, there's really three flavors of VDI. What we call remote desktop sessions, what we used to call remote desktop services. Before that, we called it terminal services, and then everybody knew what terminal services meant because we used that name for 10 years, so we changed it. Gave you something new to keep you on your toes, I guess. But when we talk about VM-based VDI or virtual machine-based, we can do it in two different ways. Personal VMs, which is really a one-to-one mapping of a user to a virtual machine. This is the analog of taking that PC that sits on their desktop, moving it into a virtual machine in the data center. Every time they connect, they're always connected back to that machine. The changes they make to it are there and persistent, and it's their machine, just like if it were physically at their desktop. It's just sitting in the data center now. As an IT, that also means you manage it, very similar to the way you manage a physical PC. You still have to make sure that the antivirus software is up to date, that your backup solutions and things are in place, just like you did for physical PCs. We also support what we call pooled VMs. I describe this as being, I use the hotel analogy for this. When you come to a hotel and you go to the front desk, they've got hundreds of rooms that are just alike. They give you a key to a room. You go use that room. And it doesn't really matter what I do in my hotel room. I can move the bed and I can put it under the window. I can change the color of the bed sheets. But when I check out, what do? They reset that room exactly like every other room in the hotel. Pooled VMs are the same way. A user logs on. We give them a standard desktop. Doesn't matter what they do. When they log out, we're going to discard all those changes. We're going to revert that machine back to that gold image that we had at the start. Makes it very easy for you as administrators to administer and manage. You just have to update that one gold image, and we automatically replicate it to the other machines. So people say, well, how do I choose which of those do I want? Do I want to use sessions that I've been around and I'm familiar with, or do I want to go with one of these new VDI solutions? Well, I tell people, look at it in a couple of different ways and decide which of these things are important to you. When you look at personalization, app compatibility, ease of management, cost effectiveness, these are some of the ways that you can start to think about which solution do I want. The nice thing with a Microsoft solution is it's not mutually exclusive. You can use a mix and match of all three of them in your environment, and it's all managed from the same console. It can even be on the same set of server hardware. When you look at personalization, session host servers, again, there's not a lot of personalization available to users. We don't want to make them administrators on the server because that's a bad idea. Hopefully everybody knows that already. So we're limited to the personalization we can really grant to the user. Pooled VMs have similar issues because we discard any changes the user makes typically. We have a solution for that in Microsoft VDI with user profile disks that I'll talk about, a way that we can still give users some of that personalization even though any long-term changes they make to the machine are discarded. And of course, with personal VMs, because this is the analog to a physical PC, you can really open that up and give users as much permission on that as you want to. If you want to make them administrators, you can. Give them full personalization, the ability to install applications, you can do that. As far as app compatibility goes, we give it 2 stars because it's pretty good app compat that we have with session-based servers. There are a few applications that detect the operating system version, and if they see that it's a server operating system, they won't install. You may have older applications that weren't built with a multi-user environment in mind, so maybe they're writing settings to HKey local machine instead of HKey current user, so it's getting picked up for every user when one user makes a change. So sometimes there are some app compatibility issues there. With pooled and personal VMs, you're giving them a Windows client operating system, Windows 7 or Windows 8, so the app compatibility that comes with those operating systems is going to come along in the VDI environment. When we talk about ease of management, it starts to flip a little bit the other way. Session servers are very easy to manage. When a patch comes out, you patch your one server or your 5 servers or 10 servers and you're done. It's also very easy with pooled VMs. When Patch Tuesday comes around or a service pack comes out, you update your gold image and then just tell it, replicate this gold image across the pool, and it takes care of that for you. Makes it pretty easy to manage. You're just managing that one gold image. When you get to personal VMs, again, this is just like physical machines. The challenges of managing physical machines, you've just moved into the data center now. So it's better maybe in a lot of ways, but you're still going to need to make sure that those machines are patched and maintained because they are persistent machines. And then cost effectiveness we see on a similar scale for a lot of the same reasons. Session servers, we get more density on. In our testing, we see on the same set of hardware, you'll get twice as many users using applications in sessions versus what you'd get if you put virtual machines on that same hardware. Twice as many users on the same hardware with sessions. So yeah, that means you need to buy half as much hardware, which means your costs are going to be reduced significantly. Pooled VMs, again, you have some great storage improvements there because now you're not saving an entire hard disk for every user. We basically have that gold image, and then you've got a differencing disk for the machine, and then maybe a user profile disk for the user, so your storage is reduced, so that cost goes away because you don't have to buy as much storage. Personal VMs, the trade-off for all of that app compatibility and personalization that users get means that you're going to spend more money because you've got to account for all of that storage now in your data center for each user to have their own machine. Now, we do have some cool stuff happening with R2 with online disk deduplication that solves a lot of those problems. We're seeing some great results in the lab with that that I'll talk about a little bit more, and there's a whole session on scale where we get into that tomorrow as well. So when I talk about VDI and Server 2012, there's really three pillars that we focus on. Efficient management, how do we make that easier for you to do? Best value for VDI. If you're going to choose to do a VDI solution, why should you choose the Microsoft one? How can we save you money versus some of the other offerings that are out there? And then finally, rich user experience. At the end of the day, if we don't have a great experience for the users, if they feel like it's slow, if they feel like it's not responsive, if it disconnects all the time and they're constantly waiting for reconnects, they're not going to want to use the system. So we really focused and made investments in making it a great end user experience, reducing the bandwidth that's consumed, even on and still delivering a good experience in low bandwidth situations. We've done a bunch of things with how we handle the data on the wire to still, even in very low bandwidth situations, deliver a great experience for the user. And things like USB redirection, which I can talk about a little bit later, but the idea that any device a user plugs in locally, you can allow them access. As administrators, you can choose to turn that policy on or off, but if you want users to be able to print to their local USB printer, use a local USB scanner from within that remote session in the data center, we can enable that. You can do that out of the box with a Windows Server 2012 solution. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about efficient management. Let me just ask, show of hands, first of all, who's already doing VDI or looking at a VDI solution in their company? VDI or RDS, I lump them together. Okay. Anybody here do a Microsoft only, so no Citrix or Quest Quest or anything? Anybody do a native Microsoft VDI deployment on Server 2008 R2 with VM? Wow, that's a lot of hands. I'm sorry. I apologize on behalf of Microsoft. For those of you that haven't done it, or for those of you maybe that tried, we actually had a quick start guide that showed how to do VDI on Server 2008 R2. The quick start document is about 100 pages long, and there's all kinds of dependencies. You have to install Virtual Machine Manager, and there's all kinds of extra steps involved. It took me about a week the first time I did it to get VDI up and running on 2008 R2. It's about a week's worth of work to get one VM up and running. With Server 2012, we've got a new deployment wizard, which I'll show you in just a minute. That process has been reduced to 6 clicks. I start a wizard, I answer 6 questions, I go away and get a cup of coffee. When I come back, VDI is deployed, the broker's configured, the web access gateway is configured, my virtual machine pool is all created for me. Made it much easier to get it up and running. And then all the management is done from one place. With Server 2008 R2, I think we had about 5 different MMC consoles that you had to switch between to manage a remote desktop or a VDI environment. It's all done from within Server Manager now. We've reduced that to just one console. And the wizard we talked about. So I'll show you the tools in just a minute. I'll show you how easy we've made it to manage and deploy this solution. But I'll go into these in a little bit more detail. Very easy deployment, as I said. We've got a deployment wizard now that asks you the questions that you need. Makes it very easy to set up. You can run a quick deploy, install everything on one machine, or it makes it very easy from that same wizard to scale that out. I want to use these 4 machines as my virtual hosts. I want to use these 2 machines as my web gateway. I want this machine as my broker. All the configuration is done for you remotely. All done with the wizard. Builds all the settings for you. Very straightforward. We also support consistent publishing. So whether you're publishing desktops, whether you're publishing remote apps, again, it's all done from that same console. Session shadowing is new in R2. That was a feature that we didn't have in 2012. It had been in the product for years, and then we lost it in 2012. Session shadowing is back in R2. That usually gets a little bit of applause. Maybe not. It's okay. Desktop publishing all from one place. The other thing is everything that we can do from the admin console, we can do with PowerShell. So if you want to deploy a very large environment, you want to do thousands of desktops, you're not going to want to use the UI for that. We can do it all with PowerShell as well. So you can automate all the processes, which lets you really grow out and do some big deployments. So some of the other things that we've done with management that are kind of interesting, patching and rebooting and login process are some of the most IO-intensive parts of a VDI deployment. When users are up and running and logged in, typical office workers, they're using Outlook, they're using Internet Explorer, they're using Word. Once they're in and working, we see the IO on the disk per user right around 10 IOPS, so 10 IO operations per second per user when they're working. The reboot and the login process is about 200 IOPS, which means that's expensive for you. It takes a lot of time, and it really bogs down the system when you have to reboot machines. So when you have those processes like rebuilding your master image or patch Tuesday at 2 a.m. when patches get pushed down and deployed, what we do is automatically stagger how that comes across your VDI machine. So rather than all of them trying to reboot at once at 2 a.m., we have an algorithm that just randomizes that a little bit and spreads it out over more time so users aren't impacted as greatly. The idea of a master image, the idea that you just create one gold image, or maybe you have multiple gold images for different groups within your company, but the idea that you just manage a master image when you're doing pooled VMs. I just have to patch one machine, and it automatically gets propagated to every machine in that pool for me. And these are the kind of things that we can do that really ease some of that load. So let me show you the admin console and show you this idea that we have of a quick deploy and how we can make it so much easier to deploy VDI. So I'm going to switch here to... Okay, this machine is a brand new machine. There's nothing installed. As you can see over here on the left pane, there's no additional roles installed here yet. There's no Hyper-V, there's no IIS for the Web Access Gateway or anything. I want to show you the new wizard that we've got and how easy it is to get VDI deployed. All I'm going to do is right here from within Server Manager, say add roles and features, and this is going to launch the wizard. The first question it gives me is, do you want to do a role-based installation or a remote desktop services installation? If you pick role-based installation, that's the same checkbox list that you've seen in Server 2008. Big checklist, big list of boxes, and you put checks next to the one that you want to install. And then each one of those you go in and configure manually. But we have this new option in 2012 for remote desktop services installation that's going to launch our wizard and automate this whole process for us. So first it asks me, do you want to do a standard deployment or a quick start? Really, the difference is when I say quick start, it's going to install everything on one machine for me. This is a great way to get a proof of concept or a pilot up and running. It's going to configure everything on one machine. It is possible to scale it out later. I'll show you what that looks like. But that's really the difference between the two. If I pick standard deployment, I get a lot of extra questions. Where do you want the broker? Where do you want the web gateway? So we'll just do quick start and show you how easy it is to get everything up on one machine. The next question it asks is, do you want to do a virtual machine deployment or do you want to do session-based deployment? Session-based, you've seen before, there's really nothing else to it. We'll do virtual machine-based because this was what was so hard in 2008 R2. This is what we've made easier in 2012. So the next thing it asks me is, which machine do you want to put this on? I've only got one machine in this particular pool, so we'll just say put it on the same local machine. When I hit next, it does an inspection on that machine now. It's taking a look and figuring out, is that machine going to be compatible? He said he wanted to do virtual machine-based deployments. That means I need to install Hyper-V, so I need to check if Hyper-V is installed and if the machine is compatible. I need to see if IIS is installed because we're going to put the web gateway on that same machine as well. So it just does an inspection on the machine. It's come back and said, yep, this machine looks like it's ready to go. Because you said you wanted to do a VDI deployment, the next question it wants to know is, where's the virtual hard disk? Where's that gold image that you want me to use? And all you do to create your gold image is create a virtual machine, put Windows 7 or Windows 8 on it, install whatever corporate apps that you want, and sysprep it, and then you're done. I've already done that here with this demo-based machine, so I'm going to select that and tell it to open that, and then hit next. It gives me a summary here of what it's going to do. It's just letting me know it's going to install these roles on the machine. Because I did quick start, it's going to take that gold VM that I provided and automatically set up a pooled VM deployment collection for me. Then all I need to do is check restart and hit deploy. And this is the point where I can go get a cup of coffee. What used to take me a week's worth of work is now done. I'm not actually going to hit deploy here because it does take 20 minutes. It's not the most interesting 20 minutes of watching progress bars. So what I'll do is switch to another machine where I've finished that process so you can see what the end result looks like. This is like a cooking show. Here's one I baked earlier today. We'll switch to this machine. So this one was configured very similarly. I ran the same wizard on it. You can see a couple of things here. Hyper-V's now been installed on this machine, and Remote Desktop Services is here. When I click Remote Desktop Services, here's a summary of what's been configured. It shows me that the web access, the gateway have all been configured. Now this machine, in addition to running a pooled VM collection, I've gone ahead and built a personal virtual machine collection and session host collection on this machine as well. And these are all running on one machine. Those are all actually running on one laptop up here. I've got all three kinds of VDI being served out. And it's very easy from here, as I said, to scale this out. If I wanted to add a second machine to host additional virtual machines, it's very easy from here to say add remote desktop virtualization hosts. If I want my web access gateway to be a farm, I want it to be highly available, so I want a couple of web servers. It's the same thing. I just say add RD web access servers and specify the additional server names that I want to add to that role. I have that role installed on. We can come in here and look at these collections and see a couple of other things. The first one I'm looking at is my session collection. For this one, I've actually published applications. So instead of delivering a full desktop, you can see the applications that have been published there. Some common ones like Calculator, just for demo purposes. I've also published some of the Office apps like Excel and Word. So when a user logs in, they actually just see those icons, and we launch just that application in Remote App instead of a full desktop. You can see over here, I've got a couple of users logged in already. I'll switch and look at my personal VM next, because there's a couple of things here. One is, in this case, there's only two machines in this collection. It's a laptop. It doesn't have a whole lot of storage on it. It doesn't have a whole lot of processing power to host hundreds of VMs like we often do on real server class hardware. But I do have the ability from here to add virtual desktops. If I want to add two more or five more or 10 more, I can do that right from here. I have the ability to assign users from here as well. Remember, with a personal virtual machine collection, it's a one-to-one. Every user gets their own machine that they're always connected back to. So I do have the ability from here to go ahead and assign users directly to a machine. I can assign a user to that machine. If I leave them unassigned, as users log in and they're in the user group that's configured, that is specified here, they'll automatically just get assigned to the next machine in the pool. So I can choose whether I want to assign them or just let the system take care of that for me as users log in. When I look at my pooled VM collection, it looks very similar. Again, it's a pool, so we don't assign users to it because users will just get a session for the day. The next time they log in, they'll probably get a different machine. It doesn't matter because as soon as they log out of a session, we roll that machine back, we revert it back to the gold image. And that gold image management is very easy to do from here. Let's say it's time for us to update that image. Maybe a service pack has come out, or we've got updates to some of the applications that we want to go into that gold image. All I need to do is take that original gold image that I use, make the updates there, sysprep that again, and then come in here and say I need to recreate those desktops. First thing it's going to say is, okay, here's the virtual machines that are already on this machine. Which one do you want to use as the new gold master? Which is the one that you've made those updates to? I specify that machine. In this case, we'll use the same demo virtual machine. And the next question it asks is, okay, when do you want me to switch over to the new image? Do you want me to start now, just when users log out? We'll update that virtual machine that they were using so the next person to log in to get that machine gets the new image? Or do you want to do it on a schedule? Do you want to say, you know what, at midnight on Friday, log everybody out and do all the updates then so that it all happens over the weekend? Or I can say, you know what, we need to update this right now. Something is horribly wrong with our base image. We need to update that immediately. We can push the big red button right here and say, log everybody off, recreate all the VMs right now. So we have some options there on when we do that update. So very easy to do all these things right from one console. I'll show you one other new thing that we've got in Server R2. We mentioned session shadowing before, so I'll just show that. I've got a collection here. You can see it's got a couple of users connected to it. I have a new option here. If I right-click this, I now have this shadow option, which I didn't have in 2012. But now I have the ability to shadow a user and see what they're doing. If I shadow, I have the option to just view, just to look at what they're doing, or take control of it. And I can choose whether I want the user to know that I'm doing it or not. If I click OK here, say, yeah, I just want to take control of that other session that's logged in, and hit OK. In this case, it's actually going to pop up because we do control that by policy. You do need to set a group policy object to say, don't require users to confirm that you're going to take over their machine. But all it does, if I go ahead and kick off a shadow, this time I'll go ahead and prompt the user. Because that session happens to be running on the same machine that I'm on, if I minimize this for a second, you'll actually see the prompt pop up locally here. The administrator wants to view my session. Do I want to allow him to do that? I can say yes. Let's go ahead and, in this case, the session is an Excel remote app. And if I bring back my administrator console, you can see here in this window I'm looking at, actually, let's do this. Let's dock this over on the side just so you can see. Here I am in the user on the left side. That's me running the app locally. The right side is what the administrator is viewing. And you can see that session shadowing is working. The administrator can see whatever I'm doing in that image. And the way we've implemented this is it's actually in, you saw me launch it from Server Manager. It's actually a command line switch on MSTSC. So if you're used to running the command, you know, the executable to launch a remote desktop session, it's actually just a slash shadow command line switch you can add to that. And provided you've got the permissions, you can shadow another user session that way. So I talked a little bit about the end user experience. I'll just log back in. Oh, timed out. Okay, let me log back in. Just wanted to show this is what the end user experience looks like. Again, I really haven't done any additional configuration here. You saw before we had a list of applications published under session host and some desktops published as well, both pooled and personal VMs. Through the web portal, you can see this is what the end user experience can be like. You can see there the applications that were published for me, and you can see both the personal and pooled desktops are available. I can click on any one of these and they launch from here. I can switch back to this Excel session because one of the things that's kind of neat with Windows 8, you know, we really focused on touch in the operating system, and that works across remote sessions as well. This is a touch laptop, so commands like pinch and zoom, I can go ahead and do from here. Oh, come on. Well, touch it. Why isn't zoom working? All right, we'll figure it out later. Scrolling works. I can scroll. One finger touch works. I don't know why second touch isn't working. We'll come back to that one. Okay, so that was a little bit of the end user experience, but what we wanted to focus on there was how easy we made it for administrators to get a solution up and running. We'll come back, we'll talk more about some of the end user stuff in just a minute. So we've talked about efficient management. The next pillar was best value for VDI. What are we doing to reduce those costs? The first thing I say is, if you do VDI, don't do it to save money. And now I come back and say, but if you are going to do VDI, here's why ours is one of the least expensive options that you can choose. We do it in a few ways. One is what we call user profile disk. Remember when we talked about pooled desktops and the idea that when I log out of that pooled desktop session, we revert that back, we discard any changes that were made, which means, you know, if a user had set their background wallpaper, if they'd added favorites in Internet Explorer, we would have discarded all that and thrown it out, right? With user profile disk, what we do is we take all that user data, basically the /users directory and the HKEY current user registry key. We store those in a separate VHD file that we just put on a network share. Every user gets their own VHD file. When they log into their pooled desktop collection or a session host collection, we dynamically mount that user disk with all the user data into the session they're in. It's totally transparent to the user. They don't see anything different. They see that they're saving things to the My Documents directory on the C drive, and they're adding favorites in IE. When they log out, yeah, we roll that machine back. We discard any changes. We revert it back to the gold image. But all of those user settings were being stored in a separate VHD, that user profile disk. The next time they log on, we just dynamically mount that into the next machine that they connect to. So those settings follow them. So it's a way you can give users some of that personalization, but still get all the benefits of management and lower cost and lower disk space that you get from pooled VMs or sessions. Fair share is really just a way that we can say how, you know, if one user starts a very network-intensive operation, like they start a big file copy, or maybe they start compiling an application and it's very CPU and disk intense, how do we keep that one user from affecting the shared machine that everyone is sharing? How do we keep that one user from deteriorating the experience for the other users? Fair share does that for you automatically. It watches for one user grabbing too many resources and just throttles that back automatically. And the multiple storage options, as I said before, if you've got a SAN or you want to use a SAN, that's great. We support this. We'll support putting your virtual machines on a SAN. If you want to use some of the new stuff that's in Server 2012, you want to use scale-out file clusters and build a big file cluster and just put a bunch of cheap disks in there and let it act as your SAN, and you want to host your VMs there, we support that too. If you just want to go with local disks, if you just want to throw maybe a couple of solid-state drives for performance and some other disks in the server locally and just use local storage, we support that too. And we can get the same levels of performance regardless of which one that you choose. So you can really choose what's right for you. If you've already got a SAN investment, we'll leverage it. If you don't want to use a SAN, you want to use local disks, you want to invest in 2012 file servers, we can support those as well. The user profile disk, I always get so excited. I get ahead of myself. I talk way ahead of my slides. So we covered a lot of this. A couple things to remember with user profile disks is they are unique to just the VDI collection. People will come up and say, that's great. Can we use it on our physical machines too? No, you can't. Can I have it roam between, if a user has a couple of different VDI collections that they connect to, does the user profile disk work across all of them? No, it really is just unique to one collection. So if you have users that connect to some VDI pools and some RDS servers, you would have a user profile disk for each of those collections they connect to, that user would. If you really need users to have that type of environment, you need everything to roam everywhere, that's where some of the other technologies like user experience virtualization, UEV, roaming profiles, folder redirection, that's where those technologies come in that let you really roam from different operating system versions and physical to virtual and back again. But user profile disk is really just kind of a poor man's way to do roaming profiles just within the VDI collection. Okay, fair share, it really covers three parts: bandwidth, CPU, and disk I/O. Really, we watch for, it doesn't matter whether you're doing, Hyper-V kind of does this already for virtual machines. When you turn on session host server, we also enable it for sessions. We just really watch for any of those things getting way overused by a particular user, and we just throttle that user back so that they're not taking resources away and impacting the performance of other users on the machine. Because remember, if it's slow, users aren't going to want to use it. They're not going to like it. So we want to make sure we keep it as balanced and available to everyone as we can. Okay, so multiple storage options. As I said, you want to use direct attached storage and just throw disks locally in the server, we support that. We support your SAN, we support SMB file servers, you can use those as well. A couple of new things in R2. Tiered storage, did you guys hear about tiered storage in R2? The idea that, yeah, we don't have to, we supported all kinds of flexibility in Server 2012 to say, yeah, I want to put my gold image on solid state disks because those get the majority of the I/O. And then I've got some fast, 15K spinning disks. I want to put the differencing disks on those because those get some I/O, but not nearly as much as the gold image. And then I've got the user profile disks, or I've got user home directories. We can put those on some other cheap disks. We used to let you kind of control and split out and specify where you wanted to put those. With storage tiering, the operating system takes care of that for you. Create a storage pool and just throw a bunch of different disks in there. Put in some solid state disks. Put in some flash disks if you've got them. Put in some spinning disks. The operating system, the underlying operating system, Server 2012 R2, will automatically organize where the data is stored from your VDI collections on that collection of disks. It'll automatically put the stuff that gets read the most on the fastest storage. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to do all that planning up front and figure out where you want to put things and how many IOs you need in different places. We can just take care of that for you. And then finally, disk deduplication, which is also new in R2. The idea that if you've got a personal VM collection or even a pooled VM collection, you're going to have a lot of there's going to be a lot of duplication of the data there, right? If we gave everybody a server, if we gave everybody a Windows 7 or a Windows 8 virtual machine, they're all stored on the same location on our file server. Most of the data in there is going to be pretty similar, right? All the operating system files, the application files are the same. With online disk deduplication, we take care of looking for those common blocks and reducing them and taking them out. We reduce the amount of storage that's being used. In our labs and our testing, we're seeing really significant success with that. 80% reduction in storage. It used to be 100 gig to, you know, maybe it was a 100 gig per user that we used to have to store. Ends up being like 20 gig per user after the disk deduplication comes through. We also, and this was kind of a surprise but kind of cool, I thought, we also see performance improvements because disk deduplication has some caching built into it. So not only are we reducing the amount of data that's stored physically on the disk, we can access it faster because some of the caching that's there, which gives you some more density, more users that you can support on a given hard drive array. So cool stuff that's coming in 2012 with tiering and disk dedup. Okay. And again, I talked about this. This is one way you can do it. You can use a scale-out file server and just put all your disks in there, arrange them, and access them over the network. You could do the same thing. You could just move that storage spaces directly into the servers and use locally attached storage. We could put a SAN in there. Again, freedom of choice. Use what's right for you. There is a session tomorrow. Maybe it's Thursday. There's a scale and architecture session where one of our guys that does all of our reference architecture stuff has done testing about against these different solutions. And he'll give you the breakdown of, if you go to scale out file clusters, yeah, that's great. Scale out file server lets you put all your data in one place. Your network bandwidth goes up because now the traffic between the Hyper-V servers and the scale out file server is now picking up what would have been local disk I/O. So it gives you kind of the trade-offs, how much bandwidth you'll need additional in your data center if you go to this type of a solution, but also the improvements you get in I/O and things like cluster shared volume caching and how we get some significant performance improvements just by enabling caching of that data on the Hyper-V servers. Okay, so I talked a lot about cost. Let me just kind of bottom line it this way. If we start with what is typically the most expensive solution, personal virtual machines, all we've done is picked up the user's physical machine, put it in a virtual machine, and put it in the data center. This is what our costs look like. We've got a bunch of management costs, again, because we're managing them just like we did physical machines. We still have to patch them, put antivirus on them. So we've got some significant management costs there. But far and away, that SAN storage is what's going to be expensive. Getting enough I/O to support those machines, you figure 10 IOPS per user, so 100 users, 200 users is thousands of IOPS per second. So you've got a lot of IOPS there. So your disk storage ends up being the most expensive part there. Storage is always the hardest part of VDI, getting enough throughput on the disks to support the users. Now, I can reduce that a little bit by using things like AppV and disk deduplication. I can reduce some of those costs. I can get some of that storage out of the way. So that's a good thing. We can save some money there. The next option is when we look at pooled virtual machines. So we can use user profile disks to give users that personalization that they want. So that's going to reduce the management costs. That's going to reduce our storage costs quite a bit because now we really just have one gold image and a differencing disk for each additional machine in that pool rather than a full, complete operating system install for each user. So our costs go down there. And then finally, with session host servers, management costs go down again very significantly because I don't have to manage that gold image and take care of making sure that gold image gets updated and replicated. All my patching happens right on the server. So those costs go down. I also get some storage savings because now I'm not managing any additional disk images for users. So we typically see the best cost savings with sessions. Also, your compute costs go down because we can get twice as many users on the same hardware. So we can buy half as many servers if sessions does what we need it to. And then, oh, that's right, we can use direct attached storage instead of the SAN, and we can save even more money on top of that by using those local disks instead of having to invest in a SAN. So I talk about saving costs, and I talk about why Microsoft VDI. That's the quick shot view of how we save you that. So high availability, I'll just touch on for a minute. I showed you in the admin console a little bit ago how easy it is to start to scale these things out, how easy it is to add additional virtualization hosts, web hosts, things like that. Because we're leveraging Hyper-V, that means all the great scale from Hyper-V is right there. You could have up to 64 machines in a cluster. You could have 8,000 virtual machines running in that cluster. Just because we're built on top of Hyper-V, we get all that for free. And this is these are the typical roles in a VDI solution. You can see we've got either our virtualization hosts or our remote desktop session host servers there. You've got our connection broker that takes care of routing users to either their existing session or assigning them a new session. You've got the web access. You've got the remote desktop gateway, which is kind of a poor man's VPN just for the RDP traffic. Now, previously, in 2008, all of these were highly available because we could basically cluster them. We could either build a farm for our web servers or our gateway servers. We could do an active cluster for our licensing servers if we wanted to. But the remote desktop connection broker was always a single point of failure. We couldn't do an active cluster of that thing. In 2012, we fixed that. We take advantage of SQL Server clustering. We've already got a SQL Server that's highly available. You can just configure your broker for high availability. You tell it, instead of using your own local database, use that SQL Server. It's highly available. And you can also start scaling your broker out by adding additional brokers and just telling them all, use that SQL Server. So they share that data. So now we're now highly available at every part of the VDI solution. So if you want to scale big and make sure people can always get on, you can do it now. Okay. So the third part we talk about is rich user experience. Users aren't going to use the system if they think it's slow, if it's clunky, if it isn't as responsive as their local machine was. They're not going to want to use a remote desktop solution. So we made significant investments in really making that a great solution, making it work great over slow bandwidth connections. Users maybe on a 2 megabit network or maybe you're connecting intercontinentally and you've got some high latency. How do we still make that a usable, workable solution for users? We also have GPU support. The idea that maybe you've got some applications that work better with a GPU. Now, if you don't have a GPU, the nice thing is with Windows 8, we'll emulate a GPU on the CPU. So if you've got applications that are accelerated and want to take advantage of a graphics card, they'll still run. We'll just use the CPU. Performance won't be as good as if you had a native GPU. But you can still run applications. For most office work, it's fine. If you're running Word and Excel and things like that, the synthetic GPU works just fine. But if you do want to do some CAD/CAM stuff or you've got some kind of simulation software or 3D rendering software that wants to take advantage of a GPU, we support GPU virtualization. You can put one GPU in a server and it'll get shared across some number of VMs depending on how much RAM is on your server, really sets how many VMs can take advantage of that. USB redirection. We remote the entire USB bus, so any USB device you plug in is going to work in that remote session, provided you've got drivers installed for it. And we compress that traffic too, so it's not that full USB traffic going over the WAN. And then seamless experience, which I'll talk about a little bit more, things like our new modern client and support for touch and things like that. So when I say rich user experience, what does that mean? It's all these things, right? We've got lots of different form factors. We've got different devices. I need to be able to reconnect quickly if I am on kind of a flaky network connection. Maybe I'm trying to use the 4G connection from my phone and I'm coming in and out of service. I want it to be able to reconnect quickly so that I can still work. Support for touch, support for single sign-on, so I'm not having to put my password in 3 or 4 different times. Making remote app seamlessly run just like it would if it were a local application. Those are the kind of investments we're making to make it really feel like a high fidelity experience for users, make it feel as much like a local experience as we can, even when it's done remotely. So there's a few ways we do it. Let me talk about the LAN and WAN experience. people always said that the RDP protocol was a good protocol on the LAN. It wasn't great in WAN environments. And people looked at things like Citrix ICA for that. We've made some very significant improvements in our WAN performance, and I'll do a little bit of demo on that for you in a minute. But I want to talk about how we're doing it. How did we solve that WAN problem? We did it in a few ways. One is what we call adaptive graphics. When you look at a page, for example, this is a web page. There's a lot of different things happening on this web page, right? We've got some text. We've got some images. And in this case, we've actually also got a flash video that plays on this web page. With RDP 8, which is the protocol that's used in Server 2012 and Windows 8, we actually will look at a page like that, and we'll use a separate codec to compress each of these pieces of data. Text, we always want to be clear, right? Users always want clear text. We don't want to compress text to the point that it looks blocky and hard to read. So we have a special codec that we compress and we send the text in. With the images, we put those in a different codec, and we dynamically detect the network conditions and decide how high resolution version of that image we should push over the wire. And video, we solve in a couple of different ways too, and I'll talk about that in a minute, because we do some things to, it's very painful when you think about watching a video on YouTube, for example. If you're doing that on a remote desktop connection, that remote desktop server is connected to YouTube, it's downloading that compressed video, it's decompressing it, and it's playing it back, and then we're trying to take that uncompressed playback video and push it down through that RDP file to the endpoint. How do we solve that problem? How can we not have that traffic doing all these extra hops and decompressing it just so we can send uncompressed data down to the endpoint? Progressive rendering, I talked about this with images. Do you guys remember surfing the web over dial-up? Yeah, we brought that back. This is dynamic. We automatically detect it. If it's a low-speed connection, we'll send any graphics in a very low-res version, and we'll automatically just progressively render those more and more clear. Notice the text always stays clear, though, because we're putting text in a different codec. The text is always clear. The images will get through to that highest resolution version of them as soon as we can. Couple things that we've done as well. We've included support for UDP traffic. It used to be all of the RDP traffic was TCP traffic, which meant every packet we had to wait and make sure it was acknowledged. If you think about watching a video, if I am watching a video over my RDP session and packets are being dropped because it's kind of a lossy network, packets are being dropped, I don't really need you to resend me those packets, right? Because by the time you resend them, I'm probably 2 or 3 seconds further along in that video, and I don't need those packets anymore. So we detect if it's traffic that we can send over UDP, like video, we switch and we use UDP for it. Right there, we've cut in half the amount of bandwidth we're using because we don't have all those acknowledgement packets coming back and all those retransmits happening. So we reduce traffic that way. And we automatically detect this. The RDP client is always looking at the network conditions, figuring out how fast the connection is, how fast the round trip is, and tuning these things, whether to use UDP or TCP, whether to send low-res versions of graphics the first time through. So we fix a lot of these things automatically. The other way we do it is with RemoteFX media streaming. So if I'm sitting on my laptop, which is perfectly capable of playing video, right? But I'm in a remote desktop session from my laptop, and I talked about this just a minute ago. The idea that the server is now downloading that compressed video file, uncompressing it, decoding it, and then pushing that uncompressed file down to me on my endpoint, where my endpoint was perfectly capable of decoding that video. If we detect that's the case, if we realize that the endpoint you're connecting from has decoders for MPEG video, we just redirect that compressed stream to the endpoint. We let the endpoint take care of doing that decompression and playback. And it's totally seamless. It fits right in the window where it's supposed to be, but we're letting the endpoint do that. We're sending all that video traffic down in its compressed form. So we see some significant improvements there. If it's Windows media files, we automatically send those and let the endpoint decompress them if it's capable of it. If you're using some of these other file formats, QuickTime, HTML5, Flash videos, we actually transcode them. We will transcode them into our H.264 MPEG codec and send them down and let the endpoint take care of that decoding for you. So again, I'll do a demo of this and show you comparing Windows 7 with the old format and what Windows 8 can do, how much better we make that video experience with things like UDP and this media streaming. I talked about USB device redirection, I think, already. Really, any device, as long as the drivers are in the endpoint or are in the remote desktop machine, we remote that entire USB bus. And that is configurable by policy. If you don't want users plugging thumb drives in and downloading data, because the whole reason that you went to VDI was to keep all your data in the data center, you can do that. You can control what local devices are available. I talked a little bit about the GPU. Like I said, we'll do a little bit of demo. For the most part, the CPU emulated or the soft GPU is fine. It works great for most Office applications. If you do have stuff that's 3D accelerated or you really want full animations and things, if you want to put GPUs in your server, we can virtualize that GPU. We can slice up a single GPU, make it available to multiple virtual machines. A couple of things that are new in R2, dynamically adding and removing monitors. So it used to be if I had a remote desktop session running, and on my local machine I plugged in a second monitor, the remote session never picked that up. I'd have to disconnect and reconnect for it to find that second monitor. That's been fixed in R2. It'll automatically detect and extend to that second monitor. Same with resolution changes. We'll detect that your resolution changed. You don't have to disconnect and reconnect for your remote session to pick up the new local resolution. Improved remote app behavior. Again, just making remote apps behave more like local applications. I'll show you that in just a minute. And quick reconnect. Basically, we've taken what used to sometimes take up to 60 seconds for a reconnect to happen, and we've shortened that in most cases to under 10 seconds, particularly on low bandwidth connections. We've also made it less intrusive when we're reconnecting. It's more like the not responding that you get from any other app that's kind of slow and waiting, whereas it used to be this big, the whole screen kind of went gray as it tried to reconnect. So we've made that a little less intrusive and a faster experience. And we had some great WAN improvements. I talked about some of the ways we did that in 2012. We've improved some of those codecs even further in R2, so we're seeing even better performance over the WAN for some of that video playback. So let me demo some of this stuff. Let me show you what some of this looks like. So the first one that I'll show is the remote app experience. Now, this is remote app from a Server 2012 machine. So I've got Excel installed on my RDS server, and that's where Excel is actually running. If I were to bring up Performance Monitor here, I'll bring up Task Manager because I actually want it for another demo. And if I look at the processes that are running here, you don't see Excel running here. You just see the remote desktop connections because that's where Excel is actually running. And it looks pretty good, but you notice a couple of things. When I do a resize, you just kind of get this gray drawing bar. When I move the window around, you just see the window frame get moved. And when I look at the thumbnail preview down here, all I get is that generic Excel icon. I don't get the thumbnail view of what's actually happening in the window like I do with other types of connections. So let me compare that to an R2 server. So this Excel remote app is running from my R2 server. And you can see a couple of things right here, right away. When I resize, it resizes automatically. When I drag the window around, instead of just the frame, we see the whole window drag. When I hover down here over the icon, you see the whole window. You don't see just the generic icon. You actually see the real thumbnail. And, of course, full touch support for scrolling and zooming and things like that. So one of the other things we talked about is dynamic resolution change. And I know this happens to me a lot, as I'm moving between sitting at my laptop that's got an external monitor, and then I move to my laptop in a meeting or something, and the resolution is different. We go into this kind of it's kind of scroll bar hell is how I refer to it. Here's a full desktop connection to my VDI server. So you can see I can see the whole screen. I can get to the close window up here. I can get to the start button down here. I'm going to go ahead and do a resolution change locally here. I'm just going to turn this down to 1024 by 768 and apply that change. So you'll see the window. We lost the bar. We lost that width there because we've gone to this. We've changed resolutions. Now when I go back to that remote desktop server session, maximize that. now I'm in scroll bar hell. I need to get to the close button for this window. I got to scroll over here and I got to hit close. Now I need to get to the start bar. I got to scroll back down. I got to scroll back over here to get to the start bar. We changed resolutions, but the remote session that was running full screen didn't change with us. Now, if I compare that to my R2 server, which does support this dynamic redraw or dynamic resolution change, that was very fast. I don't know if you saw it, but it flickered for just a second. But I've got my full resolution here in the smaller window. I can get to my close button. I can get to my start button. Very easy to do. And when I change the resolution back, so I get my full wide screen, you'll see when I go to my R2 server and maximize it, flickers very quickly, but it matches that full resolution. Not impressive to anybody, huh? Okay. Same thing happens if you've got a tablet device and you rotate it. Same thing. We dynamically detect the rotation and we'll resize the windows appropriate to the new resolution because you rotated it. What else can I show you? How about bandwidth improvements? I'm going to bring up a Windows 7 machine side by side with a Windows 8 machine. And I'm going to bring up a website that I built myself. And you'll see immediately there's a reason that I'm not a web designer. I built a web page to play I built a web page that has a video on it. And I'm going to go ahead and start this video playing on. So I've got a Windows 7 machine here on the left and a Windows 8 machine here on the right. I'm going to go ahead and start these playing. And you can see they're both playing pretty well. This is, they're both very streaming. They both look pretty good. This is on local wide area network speed, so it doesn't look too bad. Now I'm going to bring up a network emulator. And I've already loaded a profile here that's going to drop the network speed on this to 5 megabits with 100 milliseconds of latency. When I hit this play button here, we're going to drop that down. So basically, each of these things will get half of that 5 meg. So it'll go down to a 2.5 meg connection with 100 milliseconds of latency. And you'll see almost immediately what happens to the video. And the Windows 8 machine pauses for just a second, detects that the network conditions changed, and is able to keep going. Changes the way that it's processing the video, changes what it's sending so that it keeps going. You can see the Windows 7 machine is having a harder time. Looks like the bunny maybe had a really late night because he was out at a conference. A little slow to get up this morning now. Really struggling to get moving. Because we've dropped that bandwidth down. I can bring up, if I remember to start the network. We can look here and you can see that the network traffic is really staying under that 5 megabit that we throttled it to. And you'll see when I stop my network emulator, you'll see the Windows 7 machine immediately try to catch up as it gets the rest of those packets resent that it dropped, whereas the Windows 8 machine didn't worry about dropped packets. It switched to UDP. That wasn't a problem. We'll probably see our network traffic spike a little bit. And this guy's still trying to recover. One of the interesting things is if I pause this, you see the traffic drop off. So now I've only got the Windows 8 traffic. And you'll see it's, in a lot of cases, as low as 10% of the traffic that we saw with the Windows 7 machine. Question? Is the performance difference because of the RDP version in Windows 8? Yeah, it's because we're using RDP 8, which is the new protocol version. It's got all those improvements for UDP and dynamically detecting conditions and things like that. What's that? Can you upgrade to RDP version? I don't know. What do you guys think? Would you like to have the RDP 8 protocol improvements on Windows 7? I'll give you that. It's a download. There's a Windows update for, thank you. There was the applause. You guys can have that. Yeah, so it's a Windows update package. That's the new remote desktop protocol for Windows 7 that gives you the Windows 8 performance improvements. There's also a group policy that you have to set for it to kick in and take effect. But then, yeah. We give you that Windows 8 protocol update. We're also Windows RDP 8.1, which is the protocol that's going to be in Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2. There will also be a package, and we'll also make that update available for Windows 7. So your Windows 7 clients will take it. We'll get this new performance improvement. Does Windows 7 include 2008 R2? Yes, it does. Okay, I'm going to put the bunny to down here for just a minute. The next thing I want to talk about is the RemoteFX GPU and how we can deliver an accelerated experience with a GPU. So I'm going to start up an application. So now what I've got, I just brought up a second Windows 8 machine. The one on the left has a GPU installed. It's virtualizing the GPU from my laptop. The one on the right is using the synthetic GPU on the CPU. Now I'm going to fire up an application here on both machines that simulates falling water. It's basically going to drop a bunch of pixels on the screen and then simulate falling water. It's going to calculate if those were water and how they would fall and be affected by gravity. So it's going to take it just a second to render as the app starts up here. And then you'll see these red blocks that kind of fall and start acting like water. But what I want you to see is the performance difference because this application takes advantage of the GPU. On the left side, we're using a GPU. On the right side, we're just using the CPU. And you can see there the performance difference with the GPU. If you look up at the top of the screen here, you know, we're getting 60 frames per second with the GPU. And you can see here it says it's using the RemoteFX graphics driver. This machine is getting less than half of that, 24 frames per second using the basic render driver. Why? We didn't need that. So you can see the performance, and we do, you know, there are a list of supported graphics cards. They do need to support DirectX 11. 11.1 is really the requirement there. And then the more RAM that you have in the card, the more machines you can virtualize, because we do hard allocate the RAM and the GPU per virtual machine. But the nice thing about this is, you know, if you've got multiple servers in your VDI farm and you put GPUs in all of them, we get all that live migration benefits of Hyper-V and you still get that GPU. A lot of the other solutions that are out there for doing graphics acceleration with remote desktops require that one-to-one mapping. You have to map a VDI session to a specific GPU. And when you do that, you can't roam that to a different machine. You can't migrate that VM. So, you know, a way we can deliver that. It does only support direct. It supports really old versions of OpenGL. That's the first question I get. Do you have OpenGL support? We support like OpenGL 1.1, so it is an older version of OpenGL. But DirectX applications or applications that allow you to use DirectX as the rendering engine will take advantage of this. So kind of some cool performance improvements there with the GPU. Let's see, any other demos I want to show? I don't know, I've been talking a lot. Maybe what we'll do, let me wrap up. I got just a couple of slides and we'll go ahead and do some Q&A. We'll just do a quick summary. We talked about the three ways that we answer the challenge. We've really built around efficient management, making it easy to get VDI up and running, making it easy for you to manage. Talked about best value, how we take advantage of different types of storage, giving you freedom of choice. You want to use sessions that works for most of your users? Great. You have some users or some applications that don't work with sessions? You can use VDI for that. Manage it all from one console. Put it all on one machine if you want to, or the same farm of machines. Manage it all from one place. Delivering that great user experience. As you saw, even on a slow link, on a slow WAN connection, we still were able to get good high-fidelity video playback. We support multi-touch. We support USB. We want to do everything we can to make that local experience as robust as for users as we can. Kind of standard stuff. Please, you know, there's additional resources. We also have, I'll be at the VDI booth in the expo hall, which I guess is that way. Like, I don't know, pack a lunch. It's a little ways. But I'll be there, and we've got several sessions this week that I encourage you to go to. We've got some data on the additional sessions around VDI there if you can't find them in your guide. But please check it out. There's resources here. Check it out. Start taking advantage of it. Please evaluate your sessions. This is the most important part for me, is coming to these events and talking to you guys. I love the feedback I get. I love the feedback I can take back to my product group and say, these are the things that we have to fix. These are the things that people want. That's what's useful for me, but I only get to come to these events if you guys keep giving me good eval scores. I mean, score me honestly, and give me honest feedback, but please fill those out so we get that feedback so that I can keep coming and talking about these events and we can keep getting your feedback back to the product group. Okay, What else do I want to talk about? Oh, there's three questions that I always get when I talk about, when I do these presentations. I've been in this role for about 2 years. There's three questions I know I'm going to get. So before I do Q&A, I'll answer those three for you. The first one is, do I still need Citrix? To which I say, yeah, there's lots of reasons you might still need Citrix. If you've got a mixed environment, our management tools support Windows Server 2012 RDS servers. We support Windows 7 SP1 and Windows 8 as the VDI guest VMs. If you want to do XP guest VMs, if you've still got 2008 or 2003 terminal servers, you want to manage everything from one console, you need Citrix to do that. If you've got non-Windows devices, that's the other question I always get. When are you guys going to do a client for iPad? We don't make a client for iPad. We make great Windows clients. We license the RDP protocol. We let third parties build clients for iPad and Android and all the other wonderful devices that are out there. Citrix has all of them. Citrix makes Citrix has a client for everything. So if you really want to enable VDI from any device, Citrix is a great one-stop shop for doing that. They also do some things, you know, if you've got a really complex environment or you really want to delegate the roles, who's allowed to create VMs, who's allowed to session shadow, Citrix gives you some really granular role delegation and things like that. So there are some valid reasons to use Citrix. The other thing I just want to touch on is when you're looking for devices, look for the RemoteFX certified, the RemoteFX enabled logo on thin client devices. That'll tell you that you're getting devices that will take advantage of all of the codec improvements and performance improvements that we've talked about. This program is about a year and a half old. We've got about 14 different thin client providers that participate and have certified devices with us. So look for that logo. Okay. That's the end of my presentation.